Today's episode of the S&M Show is brought to you by Baxter Blue. Do you experience digital eye strain from too much blue light exposure from digital screens? Baxter Blue glasses are not your average frames. These blue light lenses filter 80% of the highest energy blue light, eliminating 99% of glare. This past year, we have all been glued to our devices more than ever. And for me, that's at three screens, 8 hours a day, plus the time to do this podcast. Even with my 20/20 vision, my eyes get really worn out. Our exposure to digital light has soared, and our eyes and our sleep are suffering as a result. Baxter Blue is also a force for good, and it provides a pair of reading glasses for someone in need for every pair sold. This is eyewear built for our digital age, and Baxter Blue is giving our listeners 10% off your next purchase of blue light, sleep, or kids' glasses. Make sure to click the link in our show notes for your exclusive discount. This is the sign you should have been waiting for to invest in blue light glasses. We know you love your Baxters, and we know you will feel the difference.
In a world of uncertainty and despair,
you've been canceled.
Two heroes have reunited when they're needed the most.
Doing it for the money.
Live from the Pals for Life studios, it's the S&M Show. Here are your hosts, Shane Ryan and Mike Bowers.
Well, hello there. It is Thursday, May the 13th.
Yeah.
Thursday the 13th. That's unlucky. And it is currently 5:06 p.m. Pacific, 8:06 p.m. Eastern. Apologies for the slight delay there. It's been a week since I've done this, so apparently I forgot how everything works and had a little bit of technical difficulties, but here we are, back after a short hiatus. I'm Mike, and this is Shane. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. So I guess welcome back is appropriate again, because we took a little bit of a vacation. For a little bit, we're going to have to change that theme song at some point. I still love it. It's one of my favorite jams, but I guess it's appropriate this week due to my shenanigans that I caused you last week.
I wouldn't call it shenanigans, but you did take a trip down to the armpit of America, also known as Florida.
Not New Jersey, for all my friends who are thinking that's what he was referring to.
How was that?
It was interesting, my friend. It was weird to be on a plane again. Have you been on a plane since all this kind of...
Oh, no. I don't think I've been on a plane since the honeymoon, so that would have been February of 2020.
So it was a little weird. I mean, I was on a plane probably just over a year ago. So I took one last trip in February for work, and then kind of the world shut down. So I was supposed to go down to Florida to see my folks literally the week after the world shut down last year. Hmm. So it was just the week before. We still hadn't canceled the trip. Then a bunch of the travel restrictions from New York to other states went through, and then we had no choice but to cancel it. So right. We ended up pushing it back. Luckily, we had Southwest, so we were able to push it to another later time, and it only cost me $200 more to go see my folks. So it wasn't bad, but it was a little weird with the fact that planes are 100% full. Every flight that I had was full.
Yeah.
So luckily we were traveling as a crew of three, so it wasn't that awkward sitting next to somebody I didn't know. As everybody that was in our little circle. But
because Quinn's old enough, she has to have her own seat, right?
Right. And this was her first flight ever. So it was it was cool. She enjoyed it. She was actually a trooper. She was really, really good despite the circumstances. I think the only funny thing was as I was driving to the airport to go to the Rochester airport, I checked my flight status just to be safe. I was checking it throughout the day, everything was good. All of a sudden it said 20 minutes delayed, and I had no idea what that was about. So we got there, got through TSA. It was a breeze, the whole nine yards. So we ended up getting there. We get to the gate, and all of a sudden there's nine people on wheelchairs at our gate getting ready to get on the flight that we're getting on.
Right.
Then there's a fleet of about like 10 other wheelchairs that are empty. The reason why the flight was delayed coming, it was a straight flight from Tampa to Rochester. There were 25 people on that flight that needed wheelchairs. So there wasn't enough wheelchairs in the place to take them all off the plane and then not enough workers to do it. So they had to like sanitize them. So it took them forever to load them on the plane. Then I've never seen a deplaning take like 45 minutes like this, because they had to do it in shifts.
man,
as they sanitized and brought stuff back. So we almost missed our connecting flight. They wouldn't promise us that when we got there that it was still going to be in the gate. So mm-hmm. Steph picks up Quinn. I pick up her stuff. Of course, we go into BWI where we land in B, have to go to A, sprint all the way across the airport to find out that one of those people in the wheelchair was from our plane was on that plane. Held it for it. So we made it. Our luggage made it. But other than that, it was depending upon what your feelings are on the pandemic and how things are going, Florida is a very different experience than New York right now. So it was a little interesting to go to a grocery store and see maybe about 30% of people wearing, 35% of people wearing masks. And then All of a sudden they pulled back while we were there. They pulled back all the restrictions. And next thing you know, it's like 10% of people wearing masks. So
right.
It's a little different, but it's been.
Yeah, I would assume it's just business as usual down there now.
More or less. I mean, all the restaurant workers are still doing it just to, do their part and, what they have to do. But for the most part, it's a little weird because it's on the business. So most places say, please wear a mask, but no one's really enforcing it right now. And it sucks that if they put it on the business owners to be the bad guy.
Yeah.
But
man,
it's different, man. It's been 5 years since I've been there, and Florida has blown up from like just the traffic, the development, the people moving down there, the cost of living, everything has changed. So it's a different world in many aspects than what I remember it from, just because it's, rules are a little different, and just it just felt completely different than when we moved away in 2015.
Yeah. So Quinn is how old now? Four, three?
Yep. Yep. Just turned
four. Okay. So you didn't fly with her when she was, I guess, young enough to sit in one of your laps or anything?
No, that's the benefit of it. When you have a kid, everyone wants to come see you. You can
play. Yeah, that's true. Want. Yeah.
Downfall is like you get that two up until they're two to then they can fly for free. So maybe we should have taken advantage of that. But at the same token, everybody was willing to come see us. So we never did it. And then, like I said, we were going to pull the trigger last year, and then the world went to what it was.
Yeah. I'm always conflicted about kids on planes. Like, I think maybe I've gotten more sympathetic towards parents the older I've gotten, and now that many more of my friends have kids as opposed to when I was, 24, 25, it's just tough. Like, you see these videos
that sucks.
Yeah. You see these horror videos of people's kids who are just screaming the entire flight. And
we had one of those on one of our flights.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough because you want to feel bad for the parents, but then also you feel bad for everybody else because like they're having to endure it too. And it's like, it's the parents, I'm assuming, are doing everything they can to try and stop it, and it's just not working.
Well, sometimes that makes it worse. So it's like, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. And then you get the parents who sometimes like give out those like little things of bags of chocolate and candy. If you ever got one of those, like, they write a letter like from the kid. Hi, my name is whatever. I'm 3 years old. This is my first flight. Sorry if I'm a jerk.
Yeah. It's
have this Giraldi candy.
Yeah. I mean, I won't turn away free candy, but I also feel like it's not necessary. Like,
right.
You know, if your kid's rambunctious and like the candy is not going to make it less stressful. No. I feel like you're either sympathetic or you're not. But that's cool, though. Nice to hear it went well.
Yeah, it's good to see friends. It's good to see family. It's been 2 years since I've seen them. So it was got to play hockey with my old hockey buddies. So I got to do a lot of things I wanted to do and mainly relax, shut off, go to the beach, go to the pool, do nothing, no calendar. It was great to kind of tune out for a week.
Yeah, especially in this day and age when you're working remotely for the most part and you just never like you're always in the same spot. So a change of scenery, I would assume is incredible.
Right.
So
but how have you been? How was the week?
well, I was busy with our boy band tournament. It's kind of funny. For those tuning in that are looking for the bracket, we'll start to unveil that in just a second. But first of all, Let me back up. I want to give credit to my brother, Kenny, for coming up with this idea in the first place. He was like, you should have things that are some interactive stuff, like a tournament or something. So doing a boy band song tournament just seemed like the natural first step in the process.
For sure.
You and I had talked before about, you know, what if we could get some folks on the programs to actually talk about their music. And the original idea I had was to just use Cameo, because especially some of the guys from the groups that have been out of the spotlight for a while, they're fairly cheap. Like, I think I saw one was $25, $40-$50 at most. So I figure, you know, you get a couple of those, it would make for some nice content as we're going through the tournament. But then I just had this idea that in Cameo, in the app, they have a messaging feature, which up until this point I thought was the stupidest thing ever, because you pay whatever amount of money, and for the big name celebrities you're talking like $20-$25 for the ability to send one message to the celebrity with the guarantee, or not even with the guarantee, that you'll get a response. So imagine spending $25 to send a message to, I don't know, Brett Favre or Mike Tyson or someone like that, and then you just never hear anything.
Well, if Brett Favre and you get a message back, you don't know what that message might be.
That's true. You probably don't want to message Brett Favre.
So don't go in with Brett Favre saying, like, suck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so some of these guys, as we were talking, I noticed, I think it was Brad from LFO, that I noticed first. I was looking at his cameos, and I was impressed by how much time he spent on them. Like, it wasn't just one of those 20, 30 second, hey, happy birthday, here, you're a fan, that's cool, have a good day. It was, like, somebody asked him for advice on making music, and he just gave this whole thing, like, step by step, here are some things you can do. And somebody had a birthday one, and he performed happy birthday with a live band. Like, you know, that's an incredible amount of effort to put into these things compared right. to other folks. So even initially I was like, worst case scenario, if we just tell him what it's about and get him to record something, then I'm assuming it would be decent as far as content and length. But then I saw the message feature and it was like 99 cents. So I'm like, worst case scenario, I don't hear anything back, I'm out of buck. I've wasted more dollars on things stupider than that. So I sent him a DM through the app and said, this is what we're doing. We're putting together a tournament. I think I framed it as a podcast series, because obviously all these shows end up in podcast form and it just seemed right. like a better sell. And said, this is what we're doing. Would love to talk to you about the history behind Summer Girls, LFO, all that. I didn't hear anything for a couple of days. And then I think a Sunday night he messaged me back and said, hey, thanks for reaching out. That sounds really cool. Why don't you, or please contact my agent. And he gave me his contact info. So I'm like, okay, I assume I know where this is going to end up. Cause I figured, especially for an agency of that size, it's
right.
You know, it's not going to, it's going to just be ignored. So I sent him an email, probably made the radio gimmick seem bigger than it was. It was like, hey, I'm Mike with Pals for Life Radio, an internet radio station. We're putting together this 10-part podcast series on boy bands and would love to talk to Brad because given LFO's history and the tragic loss of his bandmates, I feel like it's a good story to tell. And the agent wrote me back within an hour or two and was like, can you send me some more information, some links? So send him links to our social stuff. And he said, I'll check with Brad and get back to you. And like, 2-3 days later, he wrote back and said, Brad's interested here sometimes. We set it up. But Dave from Soul Decision, that was a fun one. Because I originally reached out to Trevor, the lead singer from Soul Decision. And I want to try and find the message here. Because he wrote me back.
It was
right.
pretty entertaining. Yeah, it was pretty entertaining.
He wrote me back right away. He just never answered the question, which I think was his... I think knowing what we know now about him, about how he wasn't as excited to be lumped in with the boy bands, yeah. But told him, you know, we're putting on this stuff. Would love to talk to you because we both love Faded. He writes back. He says, yeah, Faded is the best boy band song, bro. I'll tell you why. I wrote 100% of it. Other boy bands had their hits written for them. Number two, it's about getting drunk, high, and laid. Three things I had never done when I wrote it. And he sent a winky face. And he said, number three, it's androgynous. Which, by the way, I don't think that's the right word in this situation. Number four, it's the perfect lyric to sing in a club to someone you're dancing with if you want to get laid. Run with that, bro. And put the shade smiley face. So I was like, okay, whatever. So I looked online to see, I was looking to see if any of the guys had any socials. And there's somebody did an article about what the guys are up to. And there's a post about a project that Dave had done and somebody tagged him in it. So I clicked the link and it was his personal profile. So it was just.
Yeah, it's really unassuming of a link. I found the same article afterwards because I was yeah. intrigued when he told me that story. And it's yeah. really unassuming.
It's like this guy named Dave Bowman. So I'm scrolling through. He's like, is this really him? Based on the pictures and the post, it looks like him. Looks like him, you know, looks exactly like he did 20 years ago, except with grayer hair. So I just messaged him through Facebook and said, this is who I am. This is what we're wanting to do. Are you interested? And he wrote back that night and said, you know what? Why not? I got some stories to tell. And we just chatted through Messenger and set it up. Yeah. It was that as so far that has been my favorite of the interviews. But then
so it was so entertaining and just so casual. And he was just, it seemed like we were friends.
I'm going to write him back and say, particularly once the episode's out and say, you know, here it is. Thank you for doing it. I had so much fun. You're number one on my power rankings for people to get a beer with now. And if you ever want to come back on to talk more, let me know. So yeah, it's like a tale of two different stories. And then when we scheduled everything with Brad, I just figured shoot my shot again and ask the agents, like, do you have any other boy bands you work with? Because we got 10 episodes. And he said, yeah, I work with O-Town, actually. A couple of the guys are doing interviews right now, Trevor in particular. I could check and see if he's interested, and he was. So we got LFO, Soul Decision, and O-Town so far. And we have a couple.
Credibility. We also got credibility.
We have credibility because I always add, when I get somebody new, I add them to the requests I started sending out. I signed up for IMDb Pro, where you can look up agent contact info.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I found another service. I forget what it's called, but it also has agent and manager contact info. So I started looking them up and sending off emails. And like the first ones, it was like, you know, we've got Dave of Soul Decision. I think that's what I put to Brad's agent. And then once we got that, it was, we got Brad and Dave. And then the more recent ones, it's like, we've locked in interviews with Brad and Dave and Trevor. And even with some of these agents that have said they'll check and get back to me, some of the bigger names that I don't want to talk about yet. Like I started putting in, we've confirmed interviews with these people and we're in discussions with these folks. Cause it's technically true. You know, they have acknowledged receiving the request. They said they would check and they'd get back to me. So until it comes back a no, if it comes back no, we are in discussions.
That's even more impressive that they're answering emails from bigsexymike69@gmail.com.
Yeah, I guess I should update that email address. It's been...
Oh, Hotmail. My
yeah.
bad.
Yeah, it's been 2 years now. I guess I should update that email address. So,
but I mean, hey, we got an official email account. We seem legit. We might as well use it.
Yeah. It's like, here's our website.
You forgot to add, we have Tyrone Ingram on there. Tyrone Lee Ingram.
Let's leave him alone. I feel bad. But I did see that email and had a nice laugh. But yeah, so we recorded two interviews Tuesday, late night for you, because the last one ended about 1:30 in the morning and then you had to wake up early for PT. But
yeah, it was a fun 12-hour span, but
yeah,
definitely worth it. I'm glad I stayed up and didn't mail it in for that interview, because that one both were great. I mean, and for various different ends of the spectrum.
Right.
One was way more in depth and deep than I thought it was going to be. The other one was just way more entertaining than I thought it was going to be. So it was definitely worth it for sure.
Definitely fun. So we're going to air Dave's interview next week. Our plan is we're going to air part of it live. on during the live version of the show, and then we're going to put the full interview on the podcast. So I think both of them, each interview is about 30 minutes apiece, so we'll probably play 15, 20 minutes and leave some of the other stuff for the podcast, because we want podcast listeners. Tell your friends. We're on every major podcast platform.
Yo, what's up? It's your man, Montel Jordan. This is how we do it. Got it locked on the Pals for Life radio, new internet radio station for the 80s, 90s, and 2000 hits, including yours truly, Montel Jordan. Listen live at palsradio.com, because this is how we do it.
All right, so with that, let's get into canceling some stuff. Who do you have first?
All right, so I'm going to go with, since maybe it's called recency bias, maybe it's traveling to Florida, I am canceling adult Disney people.
Oh, no.
I do have magic memories of the time when I was there, cherished it as a kid, went back as an adult, completely different experience. While that there was a lot of nostalgia, the lines, the dealing with everything, how hot it is insane. But the fact of the matter is that there's people that just religiously love that place and will spend the exorbitant amounts of money that it'll cost to be a full year membership, a travel to do this. Like I'm there and I've had enough in my fill for years. People will then go like every other year to these places, go on Disney cruise where you're surrounded by nonstop, all of this madness. And most worst of all, a lot of them don't have kids. So it's like, that's the part that's the kicker of it. So it's if you're a Disney person, my friend, like I love it. I subscribe to Disney Plus. It gets me through my nights. I really, truly enjoy that. But being an adult Disney person that is all in on this, that you'll willingly sign up to do these things and willingly pay all that money to just keep filtering this. I'm sorry. It's not for me. I'm canceling adult Disney people.
You've been canceled.
Okay. So I got two this week that I feel really, really strongly about, but I'll go for the one I'm a little less excited about here. And that's tipping at restaurants. Ooh. Yeah. So hear me out here. So tipping in restaurants seems to be, it happens in other countries, but the extent to which it happens in the States, it's significantly more convoluted than anywhere else. So restaurant workers make often minimum wage, or servers, I should say, often make minimum wage. But what that minimum wage is, it varies from state to state, because obviously every state has their own minimum wage. To make it more convoluted, the minimum wage specifically for servers varies from state to state. So for example, in North Carolina, where I grew up, I believe the minimum wage for a server is like $2.13. The idea is they get tips on top of that from their customers, and that would ultimately exceed the minimum wage of what's currently $7.25. If they exceed it, it's great. If they don't exceed it, the restaurant has to make up the difference. Really weird, right? Whereas in Washington, the minimum wage for servers that receive tips is the same as everyone else, so over $13 an hour. And yet, they also receive tips, often at the same level that people tip everywhere else, because we've been taught, 18% is the minimum,
right?
20 if it's good, 25 even if it's above and beyond. So, in Washington State, you have somebody that's making $13 an hour and receiving tips versus someone in North Carolina, South Carolina. They're receiving a couple bucks plus tips. It's just such a wide thing there. And because of that, it's gotten beaten into our heads that you have to tip no matter what. So if you have a server that's just absolutely incredible, you tip them. If you have somebody that is just awful and disappears halfway through the shift, you tip them anyway, because they have to make a living somehow. Like, that's what's been beaten into our head. So what I would like to see nationwide, we just get rid of tipping for restaurant servers and pay them a wage. And if you have to adjust your prices to meet that, then do it. Like, that way, if somebody actually goes above and beyond, I tip them and I actually have a reason to. which I would think I would normally
more not an expectation.
Exactly. Because it's just so weird. Like, if somebody sucks, I want to be able to express that somehow. But if they're making $2 an hour, even though I know they're going to get it back, I feel weird just walking away like, oh, sorry, I'm not going to help you meet your minimum wage. Just, you know, you raise the prices by 18% or whatever. Call it what it is. You know, have the restaurant pay them a fair wage. And people just have to adjust their expectations. So it's just too, like I said, the tipping expectations are just too weird from state to state. It's ridiculous. I'm going to cancel it.
You've been canceled.
All right, back to you. What do you got?
I'm proactively canceling Slam Ball. Oh. So Slam Ball's been in the getting some buzz lately. And for those who don't remember, Slam Ball is a little bit of basketball, little bit of hockey, little bit of football all combined while doing while bouncing on trampolines. It was high flying. It was a spectacle to see. It had some really cool team names. It was on Spike TV back in the heyday. It was interesting. So then it kind of went away for some financial troubles. They're fast forward to around now. They've been making some headway, and there's like some professional leagues in China. So the guy who's the owner went over there. Some other people of note have been taking notice, and it's getting a little bit more traction that they're kind of building up. There might be a comeback coming to that. One of my favorite podcasts that I listened to interviewed the guy who was the creator of it. So maybe we have aspirations. So maybe I shouldn't cancel them because I would love to talk to this guy about it. But I'm doing this out of solidarity for you, my friend, because I know a couple episodes ago we talked about a very life-changing incident that you had on trampoline, and out of solidarity and bringing awareness to the dangers that trampoline aerobics and athletics can do, I am canceling Slam Ball for you, my friend. So
you've that is been my canceled.
You know, of all the things you've done for me over the years, like I mentioned before, you came up to visit me after my mom died. You gave me rides to work when my car was in the shop. I think this is probably the sweetest thing that you have ever done. If trampolines had been canceled long ago, I would have been able to make it to Erica and Patrick's wedding. And I've never said that publicly before, but thank you. That I'm just going to need a minute. I'm sorry. Just really, it really hits me in the feels. All right. Well, with that out of the way, I'm going to cancel. And I've been hyped up about this since I thought of it last week.
Good one. It's a good one.
I'm getting rid of carpool lanes, and let me tell you why. So I appreciate how the carpool lanes started. It's you have two people or three people or four people. They're going to the same place. Maybe people that work together work in the same area. Maybe a couple neighbors that are going to an event. They ride together, less cars on the road. Give them a benefit. That's cool. But this is what it's turned into nowadays. Typically, the people in the carpool lanes, from my experience, it's one of two people. You have the household of people that are going somewhere that would have been in the same car regardless, because it would be really weird if roommates or two spouses or a parent and their kids, if they rode in separate cars going to the same place. That would be weird. Why are we rewarding them for doing stuff while living together? But the part that really gets me riled up are the people that use the carpool lane as just another passing lane. So you're on the highway. People aren't going as fast as you would like them to. Maybe you've hit some traffic because sometimes that happens at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So little Joe in his Beamer or his Mercedes-Benz can't wait that extra 30 seconds it's going to be. So he zooms into the carpool lane, passes everybody, and then gets back over. It pisses me off so bad as somebody that tends to follow the rules and gets picked on a little bit for it. That one gets me the most. And I know I've had friends that have abused that, and it's always the same thing. It's like, well, I've got to get somewhere. I'm running late. I've got places to go. You know what? I think we all have got somewhere to go. You know how I know that? Because we're in a car on the interstate. We're not just sitting there for shits and giggles. It's because we're going somewhere. Everybody has somewhere to be. It does not make you more special because your car is nicer or because you suck at managing your time. So carpool lanes, you served your purpose. Thank you for your service. You're canceled.
You've been canceled.
Okay, we are back. Shane, do you want to introduce your guest here as he gets set up?
All right. So, hey, Chris, how's it going, my man? Sorry we are coming in hot right away, even though we told you we weren't. We had a few technical difficulties, so I apologize that. So we are pleased to welcome Chris Grossi. So Chris and I had the pleasure of working together a few years ago at Georgetown University, and now Chris is currently the assistant athletics director for marketing at Penn State University. So we're really glad to have you come on and join us today and talk a little bit about your career, some of the cool promotions you did, the life of a sports marketer, and whatever other shenanigans we're getting into. So how's it going, my friend? How you been?
Great to be here. Great to see you guys. Ecstatic to be on during your boy band contest. I'm a huge Backstreet Boys guy myself. They were my group back in the day. And everybody as a 5 seed, I think I saw that. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on. Yeah, I know you're talking about the 5-12 upsets, but it's not happening there. I mean, that is an all-time classic. That could get to the Final Four. That could win the whole thing, in my opinion. So,
we got a hot take there. So,
that's one I might agree with as a teaser for a little bit later. So it's a good one off the start. So,
and actually, hold on before we get into that. Since he did give us what I dub a hot take, you know what that means. Hot Take Thursday is officially underway with that.
Wow, I started it. This is great.
Yeah.
This is great.
So, I guess get us started to get our listeners to know you a little bit better. Can you tell us a little bit how you got into sports marketing and how you kind of broke into the field?
For sure. I grew up in New Hampshire, a New England guy, and went to high school in Manchester, New Hampshire, which is the biggest city in New Hampshire, which is quite a title. I was always into pro sports growing up. As someone growing up up in New England, pro sports is what we live and die with. When I was younger, things weren't going great. We were in a pretty long streak of no baseball, World Series, and Patriots weren't playing well, and Bruins and Celtics were on and off, but can't complain anymore because shortly after that things turned around quickly. But was into pro sports, but looking at colleges and where I kind of wanted to study, I knew I wanted to study marketing, and UConn was a place that came on my radar. It was far enough away from home, a couple hours, that I felt like I was going away to college, but could still go back on the weekends if I needed to do some laundry and stuff. But that's where I really was acquainted with college sports. So for me, college sports, other than college hockey, really wasn't anything that was ever on my radar. But going to UConn, I think I got brought along to a couple basketball games early on, and it was a match made in heaven from there on out. And I spent my first year at UConn as a super fan, camping out outside of our basketball facility to be able to get front row seats for the big games on national television. Pretty much a super fan, going to soccer games and football games and hockey games and baseball, softball, everything. While I was doing all this, I saw these guys, who were students working and interning, running the contest on the court, handing out the bobbleheads or posters when you got into the arena. And I thought, yeah, that's what I want to do. I want to, that's how I'm going to get my start in this business. And And so my sophomore year on, I worked as an intern in the marketing department at UConn, and had a lot of fun there. That's when UConn football was rocking and rolling too. We just opened up a brand new facility. 2004 was my golden year. My college basketball team won the national championship. My college football team made their first ever bowl. Red Sox broke the curse. Patriots won the Super Bowl. It was like a pinch me type of year. I couldn't believe it was all happening. But, you know, from that point on, I've been doing this college athletics marketing thing ever since, about 15 or 16 years now. I worked at the Naval Academy. I went to grad school at Florida State and worked there in their marketing department. I went down across the country to New Mexico State University for a year, back up to Navy, then to Georgetown, where I met you, Shane, and right. got to work with you. And finally ended up here in Happy Valley. So it's been a great ride for sure. And you know, just love this business, love doing what I do, and can't see myself doing anything else.
Cool. So what's it like day to day working in sports marketing, particularly at a school like Penn State, which has a very passionate fan base?
Yeah, it's a great question because it's different everywhere I've been. My responsibilities have been different. At Georgetown, I was a marketing staff of one full-time person. So we did everything. I was, you know, running the social media accounts. I was doing all of the in-game fan experience stuff, all the advertising, graphic design, video editing. Pretty much everything. I tell people our job is usually to get people to come to games, make sure they enjoy themselves, and then get them to come back again. So that's the elevator pitch of what we do. But you know, each place is a little different based on fan bases, resources, location of the schools. I've worked at a military academy, public schools, private schools, small, big, schools in the middle of the city like Georgetown, schools in the middle of nowhere like Penn State. And so, you know, what you do at each is really dependent on the resources and the staffing that you have around you. At Penn State, we're really focused on that fan experience, on driving people to our events, and all for all 31 sports that we have here. And that's another unique thing here at Penn State. We've got 31 sports, one of the highest sport counts in the country, and our marketing staff is at all of them and constantly pushing out information and pushing people to our game. So it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of work. Working with the Penn State fan base has been something I've dreamed of, you know, and working in a big city in Georgetown. There are a lot of Georgetown fans there, but there are a lot of other people there and a lot of other ways to spend your entertainment dollar. Coming to Penn State, where the whole state is just crazy about the university and about the athletic department. You know, and we open up the gates for a football game and have 107,000 people show up. It's a dream, in working in this business. So really enjoyed it.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. I can imagine being very different and especially given by the fan bases, the proximity, the things that are there in competition, it's gotta be very different. And we know we have one, very special Penn State fan listening right now. So I'm sure she's, agreeing with every word you say about how it is over there. So I guess, now that we got to know each other, during our time at Georgetown, you kind of mentioned that, during that time, you and your team were known for some, amazing proposal or some amazing, like, promotional packages. Some of the ones that come to my mind from remembering back in those days were the actual reality section, the proposal packages, participation trophy day, retiring cargo shorts. What would you say out of all your experiences you did has been your favorite promotion that you've done?
Yeah. If someone just logged on here and heard you mention those things, they'd be like, what are they talking about? But you know, this was kind of, a kind of born out of, the fact that we were in the middle of the city surrounded by pro teams, other college teams, unlimited entertainment options. And we needed a way to break through the clutter of the media coverage and to really stand out. And what we were able to do there, with the help and support of our administration at Georgetown, was to try to do some really fun out of the box. I don't want to say minor league baseball type things because I feel like there's a bad connotation to that, but like, you know, really fun, different experiences, and we're able to do it relatively inexpensively and gather a lot of attention. So, I have a couple favorites. We gave away kale at a basketball game, at a women's basketball game in 2015. And this is when like kale was like a hot button issue. People were really, really polarized by it. Most people hated it. A couple people liked it, but, we did a Hail to Kale night. And, that was like the first time that, that I saw the power of the DC market and the attention that we could get for being creative. I mean, it blew up. It was on ESPN. It was all over the country, different news reports. I had people, kale growers from California, calling me, asking if they could send a pallet of kale over to give out at the game. I'm like, I don't think we need that much kale. Like that's plenty. But we had a ton of fun. We made some kale items for sale on in the concession stand. We gave away kale salads. Anyone with the letters K-A-L-E got in for free. Kale eating contest. Like, we had a blast. And like 2 weeks after, Michelle Obama mentioned it in one of her speeches that she was giving about healthy living. She said, you know, and just to show you how things are changing, the folks at Georgetown gave away kale to fans the other day. And I was like, wow, this is crazy. So that was a fun one. My other probably favorite one was probably Millennial Day that we did at soccer. We did it at the right time before it became like really controversial, and we had fun with it, but we poked fun at all the stereotypes of millennials. So we gave out participation trophies. We had a nap at halftime of the game because millennials are lazy, apparently. We gave discounts if you had three or more jobs in the last 3 years. We had a cable cord cutting station. We had a selfie station with a mascot. We had a blast with it, and that one blew up too. And I would say about 75% of the coverage we got was positive. And there are a couple people that were like, yeah, this is so stupid. But I mean, it was on ESPN. It was tweeted out by ESPN Twitter account to 33 million people. It was in the Washington Post. It was just everywhere. It was pretty cool. So we were able to drive a ton of attention to little old Georgetown, at the corner of the city. For those promotions were a women's basketball game and a men's soccer game. And we were able to drive some people there. So, a lot of fun and just love the chance of being creative for sure. So
with that, I mean, you mentioned getting coverage on ESPN. I know you went on to talk to Bob Lee on Outside the Lines. Michelle Obama mentioning a promotion in a speech, the Washington Post. What would you say is your proudest moment with all that? Like the thing that happened where you said, you know, that's really cool that happened.
That's a great question. The Outside the Lines thing was kind of like surreal. Usually when you're on Outside the Lines, it's not for something good. but just to go into the studio and to kind of do that was really cool for me. You know, for me and my career though, it's working with all of our interns, our graduate assistants, my staff now, and seeing them succeed and seeing them go on and get better jobs than I have, and roll up that career ladder and really take a liking to what we're doing and buying into it. That's been really rewarding for me to see. And that's one of the reasons why I do what I do, because we get to work with so many awesome people. Another thing, just being able to come to Penn State was a great moment for me. And being from the Northeast, interested in college athletics, there's no better place to be, in my opinion, than here. We've got probably one of the largest marketing departments in the country. And I get to work with great coaches, great fans, great administrators, and it's been a joy for sure. So there's a couple moments that have really made me proud of what we've been able to accomplish.
Yeah.
So I know you've been in probably Penn State similar to the amount of times I've been away from Georgetown. So it's been a couple of years. So you've seen some of the full stadiums and the full experience, and then you've seen what has happened over the last couple months. How did COVID impact the way you do your job? And I don't know, can you foreshadow any things that you can see as like either like lasting changes or what we can expect to see as we start to welcome fans back, hopefully this fall?
Yeah. So the first Penn State football game I ever went to was my first day at work, and it was in 2018, and we played Appalachian State, and that was an overtime game where we won in overtime, intercepting a pass to the end zone and closing it out. I mean, it was 107,000 people there for a game against a non-conference opponent. I mean, it was incredible. And, you know, it's something I'll always remember, just being in that atmosphere. And that's like every game. Like, and I was like, wow, this is incredible. Like, I can't believe this is happening. Like, and they're like, no, this is like every game here. Like, it's just so exciting and energetic, and everyone's bought in. And so feeling that for the two normal years I was here for was awesome. And it's why we do what we do, why we're involved in fan experience and knowing the right songs to play at the right time to get the crowd going, the right videos to put up on the video board. It's one of the things that we love to do the most. And that got taken away from us in 2020. We in the Big Ten had no fans, really just family members. So I think the most people we had at a game was like 1,000. And it was difficult. It was tough. We tried as much as we could to make it feel like a normal game. And obviously that was impossible. We did the fan cutouts in the stands, which turned into the biggest hassle of our careers, because in an arena inside, it's fine, but there are winds that come through Happy Valley. And after every game, these things just flew out all over the country, and we had to go and find them in the fields and put them back in and tape all this. And we're still dealing with them now because we've got to get them back to our fans. And so it's like, anyway, so, you know, like I told you before, our job is to get people to come to games and make sure they have fun and want to come back. Well, that was taken away from us, right? So we really focus on the student athlete experience. That's always in our mind, but when there are fans in there, we've got to focus on them too. But this year we focused on our student athletes. We played music that they wanted to hear. We put stuff in the video board that they wanted to see. We really stressed the fact that we wanted to make this for them as fun and exciting as it could be. And at the same time, we really moved our marketing to engaging our fans at home. Normal football weekend, we're also laser focused on the stuff that's happening in Happy Valley because of all the responsibilities that we have. But with no fans being able to come and 107,000 people and 200,000 people extra who are in the parking lot weren't able to come into town, we had this group of people at home that we had to engage with. And so we did a lot of virtual stuff. We did a lot of streaming shows on Facebook, a lot of interactive things just to try to keep our fan base engaged throughout the season. And I think your question, Shane, is what might stick. I think our focus on virtually engaging our fans, even during home games, is going to stay because it's smart, you know. So and it helps build the fan base even if they can't be there. So that's one thing I think will stick around.
That's awesome.
Very cool. So for somebody that's, you know, maybe 19, 20, 21 years old, looking to break into sports marketing, maybe do it as a career, what sort of advice would you have for them as far as things they can do to help set them up to get into the field?
So if you're 21 and looking to get in the field, you miss out on a bunch of good opportunities, I think. I encourage students that are interested in this to get involved as soon as you can. High school, go work part-time for one of the local minor league teams in town and sell popcorn or merchandise or whatever. College, reach out to the folks in athletics and see how you can get involved and volunteer. I think that's key, because from when I went to school and, you know, I chose Florida State for grad school, there were probably like 6 or 7 grad schools in the country that offered sport administration, sport management. There's got to be like 100 now, and they're all pumping out graduates. And the thing that separates you is your experience leading up to that. So I always preach, get experience early and often, volunteer, make phone calls, meet people, network as much as you can. There are a lot of people in this business that'll talk to anybody. Just pick up the phone and call someone, shoot them a DM on Twitter, message them on LinkedIn. And for the most part, people are very generous with their time, and you know, you can learn that way and continue to grow. So I preach getting involved early. I preach being flexible with where you want to work and in what capacity you want to work in. If you want to be in sports, it's so competitive that if you say, I only want to work for an NFL team in the Southeast, you're taking a heck of a lot of opportunities off the table. And with the way things are so competitive, you're most likely not going to find a fit for you. So I went and lived in New Mexico, right? Like I never thought I'd be there ever. But that's where the job was. And it was an amazing experience for me. So there's a lot of opportunities all over the country. And, you know, another thing is people like, I want to work in the Power Five, or I want to work for the NHL. Well, you can work in sports and other capacities and then get to that point. You know, when I was at Georgetown, people were like, aren't you worried that you'll never be able to get to a Power Five school? I was like, well, if I wanted to go to a Power Five and I do a good job here, I network well, I make a good name for myself, then yeah, I think I could get there. And I was able to. So I think you got to keep all the opportunities open as possible. If you start to really pigeonhole yourself, you get into some trouble with
how
competitive things are.
No, that's awesome. So I guess a couple questions to kind of round us out. Ones that I wanted to ask is, so I know you're very active and we talked about, giving advice and connecting with people. Are there any accounts that people that are interested in breaking in can get a hold of you, or any accounts they should be following, anything you'd recommend or want to
put out there? Yes. Yeah, for sure. So, workinsports.com does a really good job. They have a really good podcast. Brian Clapp is the guy who runs that. I really enjoy listening to him. And his website has a ton of awesome resources. We have a professional organization in college athletics marketing called NACMA, N-A-C-M-A. It is a National Association of Collegiate Marketing Administrators. And we do a ton of different webinars and learning opportunities. And there's a great job board and message board and all that kind of stuff. So that's a great resource. People can reach out to me, just hit me up on Twitter. I'm pretty active there. At Chris_Grossi, G-R-O-S-S-E. And, I'll respond to anybody and interact with anybody. So happy to help in any way I can.
Excellent. So last two to get you out of here. One is, I would be remiss if I didn't ask about your predictions for FSU football this year, being that we are a Clemson podcast and radio show, and knowing that there's some blood that's stirring after last year's game cancellation. What are you feeling for the Seminoles this year? Are you liking the way they're trending with Mike Norvell?
So here's the deal, right? Like, I've worked for 6 athletic departments, and I have my allegiances where I'm from, and I have a lot of teams that I root for, and my friends give me crap for it all the time. Like, how can you root for 10 different teams? Like, you got to pick one. So in this business and what I do, the number one team I root for is where I'm working. So Penn State is number one. I root for them over anybody else, right? Number two is my alma mater, UConn. So if Penn State and UConn played right now, I'll cheer for Penn State. But anybody else plays UConn, I'm cheering for UConn, right? And then there are the other schools like Florida State, where I went to grad school, and Navy, where I worked at for 6 years, and New Mexico State, where I was for a year, and Georgetown, where I was for 4 years. I root for them, but I'm not like as attached to them as I probably could be. So that's all to say, like, I don't know enough about what's going on currently with Florida State to make a good prediction for you. I've already had one hot take. I don't want to make another one.
Really no, it's hot take there. Thursday. You can make as many as you want. That's the beauty.
But I do think he's the coach is turning stuff around. I think we've got a good recruiting class coming in next year. And I think it's a sleeping giant down there. I mean, you could see that they have been successful before. I happen to be there for the 2 years that were the worst 2 years that they've had, which is like a trend for me, which is unfortunate. But it was like the last 2 years that Bobby Bowden was the coach down there. But I think Clemson needs a good challenge, right? Like I think they need them to be good again. So hopefully there'll be some more competitive games and actually a game played.
It's more fun when they're going against each other and going at each other's throats. So
yeah.
Well, I guess I'll pivot to one more question before I get to our final one.
Yeah.
Then if you're a UConn fan, was there a civil conflict? What are your feelings on that?
Absolutely. I love that. I'm a marketing guy, right? Like, I love that. They made something out of nothing. And I know all the guys down at UCF well. And so we tease each other a lot about where the trophy is. And I know one of them has it down there.
Right.
But I loved it when it happened. Like, I'm like, whatever we could do to spice things up, because things had been going downhill for a while for the program. So I was all about it. So
I thought it was a great idea too. It was just funny how the whole the reaction and everything kind of fell into that. So I guess the final question before we get you out of here, we appreciate your time. It's been amazing, Chris. So thank you so much for yucking up with us for a little bit. I got to get your opinion. I think I know where your opinion stands, but I want to open the debate. But I know you are an authority figure in this. Is the hot dog a sandwich?
Yeah, I mean, yes, it is. I am an adamant supporter of the hot dog sandwich theory. I think it's very simple. Like, a hot dog itself is not a sandwich, but the hot dog in the bun is a sandwich. It's meat sandwiched between bread, okay? And so there's no argument there. If you have to classify it somewhere, it's a sandwich, just like a cheeseburger is a sandwich, you know, just like a taco could be a sandwich, right? It is. And all the people that are like, no, it's a hot dog. Well, I mean, yeah, you could call it a hot dog, but Cher was just Cher, but she was still a singer, right? It's not like she was only Cher. She still was classified as a singer. Like, a hot dog is classified as a sandwich. So it absolutely is a sandwich. And I would love to hear an argument against that.
Do you think that we should, because you're right, the hot dog is like, when you're talking about the wiener itself, probably can't say wiener on the radio. If you're talking about like the actual, that's true. When you own it, you can do whatever, but the actual physical hot dog is not the sandwich, but putting in the bun is. So should we call it a hot dog sandwich?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd be supportive of that.
You don't have to, but I mean, you know, do you call a submarine sandwich? No, you call it a sub. Give me a sub. I mean, that's what we called it up in New England. So, you know, it's the same thing. You can call it a hot dog sandwich. I try to, because it annoys people. But you know, I'm just trying to be, you know, honest and be transparent with people. So
yeah, that's fair.
I like it.
No arguments?
No, we agree. Shane doesn't.
I think where people get hung up is you look at the definitions. I was looking at the definitions, and it's Merriam-Webster is the only one that does put it as or wedged between a roll of some sort. Everywhere else says two pieces of bread. So I think that's where people might get hung up on it. Where for a hot dog is it's kind of sitting on top of it, not kind of, it can be depending upon how you do it. So I think
using that theory, if you're going for the two piece of bread theory versus the wedge in a bread theory, then a sub wouldn't be a sandwich.
Exactly.
Yeah. And clearly it is.
I agree with it.
People,
I
mean, that work portable at Subway are called sandwich artists, Shane. Okay. I mean, it's very, I mean, who cares what the dictionary says, even though the dictionary is with us on it. I mean, you're selling sandwiches at Subway and the bread is connected, you know? And then I don't know, you guys know the Philly area and their hoagies, right? Like these hoagies thing, they just pile everything on top. They don't even squeeze it together. It's the hardest sandwich to eat, but it's a sandwich, right? It's not.
And then you got open wedged face, right?
Yeah. It's not wedged in there, but it's still a sandwich. So.
Oh, I was just playing to be devil's advocate for the heck of it. I think.
No.
Taking your hand.
You can't do that. We canceled the devil's advocate like four episodes ago. So you can't do that.
Yeah, we did.
I love the devil's advocate. It's my favorite thing to do.
Oh, it makes better radio if I put up some sort of argument, even though I don't believe it.
Yeah, like a PTI sort of argument, just arguing for the sake of arguing.
Yeah, exactly.
That'll be Skip Bayless says.
Yeah, that'll be our next show. Maybe we can get Skip Bayless on here.
Like I mean, Tommy you guys Coward. Are pulling in some big time people here. You got some boy bands guys, and I'm like, wow, like I'm honored to be even mentioned within this group. So
I mean, really, you're kicking off the tournament. You're our first guest in the tournament series.
That's huge.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, I'm excited about that. And once again, everybody, number 5 seed, watch them. They're going to be hot.
Yeah.
I like it. All right. Well, thanks, Chris, man. I really do appreciate you taking the time to reconnect. It was good to see you again. Hopefully we can do this in person sometime soon, being that I don't think we're that far away from each other. But really do appreciate you sharing the stories and coming on and helping support us and helping us move forward and taking the time to chat with us and our listeners today.
Good way to spend an evening. Good to see you guys. Thanks again for having me.
Thanks so much. Take care.
Take care. See ya.
Well, that was good. I liked it.
Yeah, it was fun.
He's a good guy. I like him.
Yo, what's up? It's your man, Montel Jordan. This is how we do it. Got it locked on the Pals for Life radio. New internet radio station for the 80s, 90s, and 2000 hits, including yours truly, Montel Jordan. Listen live at palsradio.com because this is how we do it.
So we're at the top of the hour, but we still have one more thing that we got to do, as we do every show. And I think you know what that is.
It's time for the Douchebag of the Week.
Douchebag of the Week. As we do every week, we talk about people that are just obnoxious, do something stupid, or a combination of those things. So, Shane, let's start with you. Who do you got?
So I got two contenders this week that I'm gonna put in the mix, mainly because I have a carryover from last week, and it's too good. It's too,
it, yeah,
too important to me not to share.
I would agree.
So the first one I'll go with, should I go older or newer first?
Whichever one you feel more strongly about.
So we'll go last week first. So last week, the douchebag or douchebags of the week, in multiple ways, sense of the word, are the New York City School Board of Education, who decided last week that because of this virtual scenario we found ourselves in the virtual world we find ourselves in, they are canceling snow days. For those of you who are not from the Northeast or have never experienced a snow day, while the winter sucks up in the North, it is one of the few things you have to look forward to. And as a child, some of my fondest memories are of these snow days. So it's just one of those things where it's just, yeah, I get it that we're efficient. We can do this virtual stuff and it's fine. It'll get you out earlier, so you have a longer spring break. But like when those days are, I remember sitting up watching the news, waiting to see our school go by as being canceled every morning because it was just like there's no better joy. And it's going to really suck for the parents, right? So if like, they have to be home, they're still going to have to be home. So like, I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe they'll be entertained that way, but it's no parent loves doing homeschooling right now. And it's just, it's for me, it's like I said, you're ruining memories of my childhood, probably going against counterproductive or my adult Disney people thing. Right. So like I said, adult Disney people suck, but then this is the hill I'm going to die on. Whatever. I'm a hypocrite.
I feel you because it's one of those things of just because we can do it doesn't mean that we should do it. And I would think particularly when you're talking about the state that is the North, that like, if you have a snow day, it's probably a rarity, at least compared to us less prepared states and areas where if the weatherman says something that sounds like snow, you get canceled. Like it's gotta be bad for classes to get canceled for a day. So have it, enjoy it. Like that's one of the things that gives us a sense of normalcy again amidst all of this. Right. So yeah, New York, state of the North, don't like you. Change your mind on that. All right. Who's your other one?
My second one is one where as a Clemson fan, I'm hard pressed to call this guy a douchebag because I think he is a hero. perpetuating the narrative of little brother and dumb shenanigans that you do. But I think it would qualify for just, you know, things you shouldn't do and things you should be better off doing. So the president of University of South Carolina, Not USC, because that is in California. University of South Carolina. Bob Carlson, or former president, because he just resigned today, made some news in the past like week for some of the things that he did, most notably at graduation, calling them the University of California instead of the University of South Carolina when graduating all the graduates at graduation. And the videos are amazing, with people going,
what?
Amazing. And then found out today that he also plagiarized a good portion of his speech from like a very, and he's a former military guy, but one of the more famous military speeches of all time, or recent memory, he plagiarized a good portion of it. And so after being caught of that and saying that he didn't catch it, he decided to step down earlier today.
That's just beautiful. I mean, you know, it's at an academic institution. You have a president who,
one that praises his higher academics than us, and that's why they can't. That's why we can't be part of the SEC.
Right, exactly. You have this guy who, by the way, as far as I can tell, a good part of the university didn't want him in the first place. The governor was the one lobbying to get him interviewed, so the whole hiring practice was shady.
Right.
Then he comes and does this. Oh, and by the way, their largest donor, he ran off because he didn't do something as simple as send a sympathy card when their mom died. And yeah, it's all that damage in what, 2 years? It's amazing. And I wonder if his conspiracy theory here, I think his University of California bit was a distraction from the fact he plagiarized the speech. So let's get him all riled up about that. I'm going to finish the speech with a bunch of stuff I ripped off from somewhere else, and they're not going to notice. Just a conspiracy theory.
He ripped up the speech and it was from University of California, and then he just read that. Like, he just read it verbatim.
Yeah, it's like, to my Golden Bear family, you play in the Pac-12. And you have famous alumni like Aaron Rodgers, like just go with it.
Right.
But I also wish that his resignation letter would have been plagiarized. Like, to quote myself, I cannot tell a lie. I have a dream that I'm going to be president again someday. And as my father always told me, ask not what you can do for your school. Ask what your school can do for you. Like, just own it. Like, go all in with it.
I've truly enjoyed my time here at Berkeley. It has helped me grow as an individual.
Yeah, I think I might have made that mistake on a cover letter or two in the 15 years I've been job searching. So,
oh, I think we all have, because like you get to the point where you just start getting in that mode where you just copy and just change the names, find whatever you want to change.
And the worst part is when you notice it right after you send it, it's like,
yep.
Send off the cover letter, and then you're like, shit.
Can I retract it?
Can I get that back now? Yeah, so good nominations there. The one I have is a man named Nathaniel Saxton. He showed up in court, virtual court, in St. Joseph County, Michigan. Now, the judge here, Judge Jeffrey Middleton, has been noted for, he's been doing the virtual courts via Zoom, and he's typically been streaming them live on YouTube. So, you know, if people can't go to the courthouse to watch the trial, let's make it accessible to everyone. Now, all seems fine, except Mr. Saxton forgot to change his display name before he showed up to court. I don't know if he was a participant, if he was part of the jury or what, but I'm just going to play the exchange here. It doesn't do it justice otherwise. So here we go.
Then we'll bring this fool in. Good morning, sir. What's your name?
Me?
Yeah, you. Yes.
Nathaniel Saxton, sir.
Your name's not Buttfucker 3000, you yo-ho. Logging into my court with that as your screen name. Why would that? That in a little bit. What kind of idiot logs into court like that? What's your name again?
Nathaniel Saxton, sir, but I don't believe that I typed anything like that in.
Well, that's what it says.
Why? I apologize. That's just not
me. Yeah, you should. I'll put you in the waiting room. You can sit in limbo for a while and think about what you call yourself online.
It's amazing. And, you know, despite all that, he's trying to play it off like he had no idea that that was in there. I mean, clearly he was trying to be funny in some other setting. And maybe even for this one, I don't know. And he got caught. And he should have just owned it of, yeah, I'm sorry. I used it in another thing I went to. I forgot to change it. I was stupid. But he plays it up like, I have no idea why it says that.
You're using my girlfriend's computer.
Yeah, right? So it's either he's a liar and an idiot, or he's just an idiot and somebody played the cruelest prank on him.
I've seen that happen, though. The only defense I will give him is if he was borrowing someone else's computer.
Yeah.
Or doing something like that. Because I've seen, like, early on to Zoom, and obviously now we all know that you can do that and you can check these things and you know when to log in. But I did have when a couple of my friends who weren't used to it, or they did more like jobs that were still like essential workers in person, didn't shift there.
Uh-huh.
When we would do like group chats for like our hockey league, just catching up with guys, a guy would use his girlfriend's phone and would have like some dumb name that she changed it to, or like her name as like the whatever's there, and he didn't change it in advance. So
right.
Like, I could see that. So like, I'm hoping that maybe he just like one of his friends was messing with him and gave him his phone, and like this idiot won't know how to do it, or he's just, I forgot it because it was funny as hell because I was in a Zoom the other day when I was getting hammered for a happy hour and forgot to change it.
Yeah, he's either stupid or he has really horrible friends. But because of that, he is my douchebag of the week for this week. So here we are at the end of our journey once again.
Or the beginning of our journey, depending upon who you talk to for the next 10 weeks.
That's fair. We're about to go on a 10-week journey where we go through all these. It's going to be a lot of fun. We recorded our interviews with Brad of LFO and Dave of Soul Decision this week. I think they're a lot of fun. I think Brad's in particular is really insightful, while Dave's, as Shane mentioned before, is just really, really fun. So I think you're going to enjoy them. And we're sure you'll enjoy the O-Town interview after that. And we're still working on more. So hopefully we can get a couple more people in here before the tournament's over. So stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, it's time to go eat some taco sandwiches. So thanks again for listening in this week. Or if you're listening to the podcast, thank you. Make sure to leave a review. And with that, he's Shane and I'm Mike. Thanks again. We'll see you next week. Take care.